unto other gods whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. They have built also the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind. I've lifted the title for the message from the end of verse number 4, the blood of innocents. What does the Bible tell us about those who refuse to protect a culture that does not protect the blood of the innocent? I'd like you to consider two things on the subject of abortion today. And the first one is this. I want you to think about the causes of abortion. What would possess a person to turn on the weakest and the most vulnerable in society? I think the answer is in our text, verse number 4. Because they have forsaken me and have estranged this place and have burned incense unto other gods. Why had Judah, and Judah is in question in the book of Jeremiah, Israel has already gone into captivity, so this is the southern kingdom Jeremiah is speaking of. Why would Judah fill the place with the blood of innocents recorded for us in verse number 4? And it's the first part of the verse that tells us why. And an answer to a why question is often given with the word because. You see that in your text? Because. This is why they fill the place with the blood of innocents. Because you answer it. The Bible says, they have forsaken me. So the first idea that I want you to get under cause of abortion is the forsaking of God. People have forsaken God. When a nation loses its connection to God, it loses its moral compass. That's certainly true for America. You think about it. In your lifetime, you have seen the decisive marginalizing of God out of human society. In 1962, some of you were in school in those days. Prayer and Bible reading was legally removed from our schools. Then, just a few years later, in 1968, creationism got the boot. We're not going to teach that maybe there's another way the world could have come other than the humanistic, naturalistic, atheistic approach of naturalism. And now we're reading in our day, and hasn't it been in the news from time to time, the removal of the Ten Commandments from our courts, the removal of God from the Pledge of Allegiance, and His name from the dollar bill. We do not want God as a culture. So these are not minor wind shifts. These aren't ebbs and flows of society. These are major cultural shifts, a shift to eliminate God. But this is nothing new. This has always been the habit of mankind. When we turn away from a knowledge of God, it results in moral catastrophe. Always. Paul said this in Romans chapter 1. I'm sorry, I don't have the verse on the screen, so you can either find it or just listen to me as I read it. It's Romans 1, verses 28 and 29. The Bible says that they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. That really doesn't fit with society today, does it? They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. Has no bearing on our world today, right? Are you kidding? This could have been written today and it would have been speaking the truth. So God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. What kind of things did He give them over to when they didn't want Him in their lives? They're filled with all unrighteousness, fornication. Haven't heard any of that in our day. Wickedness, covetous. We don't have a problem with covetousness, do we? No. Maliciousness. Just vile meanness toward humanity. Nothing. We don't see any of that in the news. All right? Envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers. On and on, the list of fleshly vices is named. Why? Because they didn't want to retain God in their knowledge. We lost our moral compass. But it isn't just the fact that we've forsaken God. Look at verse number 5. It's hinted at in verse number 4, but look at verse number 5. They built also the high places of Baal to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind. I mentioned verse 4. They burnt incense into it unto other gods. Not only did they forsake God, But the scripture tells us about Judah that they went and followed other gods. It wasn't, they didn't turn and become non-religious. They turned from one god to another god. You know, when God is torn down in a society, people will always chase another god. The reason to get rid of God is so that something else can go into place. Everybody has something that they deem to be supreme. I know there's a growing movement in our culture to identify no religion. I'm nothing. We call them the nons when we talk about them as pastors, you know, reaching the nons, the people that don't have any religious affiliation. It's a growing number. And soon, it's anticipated that that number will supersede Christians and Catholics, which had historically in this country been the highest percentage. But it's nearing 25%. The latest statistic we have is 2014, 22.8% of Americans claim no religious affiliation at all. So does that mean that they don't have any God? Are you kidding me? When we tear down God, we always put something else in its place. Judah did it with their idols and their foreign God, but so do we today. All right? How about this? The gods go under new names today. It might be themselves or their own central pleasures. You don't see anybody worshiping central pleasures today, do you? All right? Make sure you turn over all the covers of the tabloids when you're checking out the supermarket. I mean, it's full of that garbage. It may be their hobby or their pastime or their career, but people worship things as supreme in their life. But more than likely, in our culture today, in most of the Western world, and even those who want to be like Americans and aren't, the God is what? It's the God of money. We have now strong reason to believe that those who are in the abortion industry are really driven by that too. It's all about the money. I don't know what the rate is for an abortion today. I have read articles in the past that have put the number anywhere around $450 plus. There is money in the industry. And this is clear from the videos that came out 2.5 years ago in the summer of 2015. Videos, undercover videos, you saw them. They've been in the news. They've been back in the news. They've been explained and re-explained, explained by Planned Parenthood, explained by the folks that shot the videos, Center for Medical Progress, CMP, was behind the videos. They have, of course, been attacked, and so you spin it however you want to. It's been spun and respun whether you believe that they are legitimate or not. The truth about the matter is, though it raised concerns and though senators suggested bills, no change has been put in place. Planned Parenthood is still being funded. No decrease in cash flow changed as a result of those videos. But the battle isn't over. Maybe you heard about the new documentary came out a couple of years ago called Blood Money. It was a movie showcasing the abortion industry. The narrator for that was Alveda King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, who is a staunch advocate for the unborn. She told one news outlet, if you look at all the evidence in several projects, you will see that Planned Parenthood is not helping women to plan families. They're helping people to kill babies and hurt women. I don't want you to get distracted with the outrage or your position on Planned Parenthood. That really isn't the purpose. It's just to show that we are ruled by other gods in this land. We might not bow down to a statue. We might not worship at a totem pole. But many Americans bow down to the god of money. And as a result, people are getting hurt. Even the subject we're talking about today, the innocents, the blood of the unborn, and the mothers who are traumatized by this kind of thing. Why did I take time to talk to you about the causes of abortion? Well, the problem with abortion isn't the Supreme Court back in 1973. And the problem with abortion isn't that the Congress hasn't passed a law to stop Roe v. Wade. And the problem isn't because we don't have the right president. The problem, according to the scriptures, is a spiritual one. Men's hearts have forsaken God. And whenever you thrust out the true God, you're going to put another one in its place. And as a result of this idolatry of self and this idolatry that my body is first and my choice is a must and I have a right, this is a new God that we have put into place at the expense of the lives of millions of babies that have been terminated. So today it's about, might be about money or my profession or my convenience, but all of these are false gods that are living at the expense of the lives of millions of unborn infants. So what's the answer to this? This is not good. The answer is the glorious gospel you possess in your heart. The answer is not better legislation, though I'm for better legislation, and I am thankful for people like Kathy Herod at Center for Arizona Policy. And if you've never Googled Center for Arizona Policy and looked at what they're doing a fine job. I'll say more about them in a few more moments. But it's a spiritual battle, and people need to get reacquainted with God because their morality will never be right unless God is at the center. Your morality won't be right unless God is at the center. Listen, when you're tempted to sin against God, whatever your particular hang-up is or struggle is, you know what the devil helps you to do? Forget that God even matters in this. Just do what you want. Sin is always that way. Temptation is always that way. Push God out, and then I am king, and I'll make my own decisions. Thank you very much. It's a spiritual problem. We've left God for lesser gods. And I'm not so much concerned with the people out there because they're not hearing what I'm saying. And most of them aren't going to dial into our website to click onto our website to listen to this. I'm talking about you today. We live in a culture of this and we just forget about it. We just forget about the fact that people are dying. And we think maybe there's nothing we can do. But the whole point of the message today is maybe there is something more we can do to protect the lives of unborn infants. I've asked you, if you would, to keep a finger in Psalm 106. So I'm going to ask you to flip over there for a moment. It's a parallel passage to Jeremiah 19, Psalm 106, verse 35. 106, verse 35. The text says about Israel that they were mingled among the heathen and learned their works, and they served their idols, which were a snare unto them. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto the devils, verse 38, and they shed innocent blood. When Israel went into the land, they were supposed to kick the enemies out because God was afraid that they would learn about their idols and follow their sinful practices. And guess what happened? Israel followed through with it, right? No. They didn't kick all the people out. They let some of them live. And as a result, they were influenced by that and ended up forsaking God for lesser gods. And the result is they too were involved in child sacrifice. This is in the Old Testament. We don't like to talk about it, right? But Israel did this. They gave up their sons and their daughters to the gods of fire. There are archaeological digs that have discovered children buried in pots in the ground in Old Testament Israel. This is not very pleasant to talk about. And as a result, they mingled with the culture, verse 35 says, and they learned their works. I think there's a danger here, right? For us to just kind of go along with culture and eventually get mingled in with it. And the works that we know to be wrong become the works that we practice, whether we intended it to happen that way or not. And this is true. It's not just people out there anymore. It's people in the church. Some Christians are having abortions. I mean, we get up and preach on purity, right? Listen, you wait till you get married. Young person, listen to me. Wait till you get married. We preach purity. And we preach stay away from sin and that this is a vice. And you know what? We should. And it is right. And young people need the encouragement. You know, so do adults. We need encouragement about purity. But then something goes awry. Some boy does this, some girl does that. Suddenly they have this great cultural weight. If this gets out, I will be stigmatized in my church. I will be ashamed of my parents. And so all of those proper pushes and encouragements to do right can flick a switch in a person's mind, and emotionally they think there is no other choice for me but to go see a doctor about this. So the pressure to be little Johnny Sunshine or little Miss Chastity may actually drive our young people in the wrong direction. We've got to be careful. We've got to have a balance here, right? Certainly we want to encourage people to moral purity. The best way not to get in this situation is to wait till you get married. No method is 100% successful all the time. People find this out in very strange ways. But we need to have that balancing message, don't we? Hey, if you blow it, we're here for you. That child is valuable to God. You may not be the right one to raise it, but there are couples around the country that are dying for a chance to raise a child and cannot. They're being cheated out of the opportunity. Yeah, maybe you made a mistake, but we're here to help you get through this. You can bring this child to term, and you can give it up to an adoption, or someone else in your family can raise it. But listen, we're not going to correct one wrong by adding another one. We need to balance our message out, don't we? There is more we can do as a church, isn't there? Instead of just pointing our finger and looking down our long hand at those who have blown it or made a mistake. There is more that the people of God can do to protect the life of the innocent. This is what this message is about. Are there causes? Yeah, they're all spiritual. That's the root problem. And the church, as God's organism of spiritual grace and help, needs to be there to put the arm around people who are hurting and struggling. Causes of abortion. Consider, secondly, some consequences thereof. Jeremiah 19 again, please. For many of you in this room, abortion may never have been part of your past or even part of someone's life that you know about. But it is happening every day right here in this city. While it may escape your notice, it never escapes God's. The Bible tells us His eyes are on all the works of men. How will He respond? Let's look at Jeremiah 19. Already verses 4 and 5, I have identified Judah as having filled the place with the blood of innocents. Now look at verse 6. The Bible says, therefore, hello, this is a conclusion. This is what's going to happen as a result. Behold, the days will come, or come, saith the Lord, that this place shall no more be called Tophet, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. And I will make void the counsel of Judah and Jerusalem in this place, and I will cause them to fall by the sword before their enemies, and by the hands of them that seek their lives, and their carcasses will I give to be meat for the fowls of the heaven and for the beasts of the earth. And I will make this city desolate and a hissing. Everyone that passeth thereby shall be astonished and hiss because of all the plagues thereof. And I will cause them to eat the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters, and they shall eat every one the flesh of his friend in the siege and straitness, wherewith their enemies and they that seek their lives shall straiten them. Wow, that was a pick-me-up. I want you to notice the consequences that were coming to Judah and Jerusalem because they had succumbed to the sins of child slaughter in their false religious worship. Three things for you here. One, your corpses, you will be corpses and slaughtered. Verses 6 and 7. The days will come in the valley of the son of Hinnom, the valley, it's called the valley of slaughter. He will cause them to fall by the sword before their enemies, and they will be meat for the fowls of heaven. So your own children will be slaughtered, you will be slaughtered in the valley of Hinnom. It's interesting, this valley, I didn't bring you a picture, but there is a rift on the eastern side of Jerusalem that turns just slightly and then drops down into the valley leading out of Jerusalem to the south. This valley, there's also a rift that comes along the western edge into the southern, so that Jerusalem naturally kind of points at a V. If you see a map, ancient Jerusalem anyway, did, over down into this valley. This valley became the city's garbage dump, the Valley of Hinnom. In fact, Jesus references it in the New Testament when sometimes he refers to the place of the wicked that is coming as Gehenna, which is another word for hell in the New Testament. The Greek is Gehenna, sometimes rendered hell in the New Testament for us. It was the city's waste dump. That's where the trash went. And as long as you were upwind from that, fine. You get downwind and the wind started blowing over the city, it was awful to be in the southern part of Judah. Great picture of hell. But here in the valley of Tophet, the valley of Hinnom, calls it the valley of slaughter, they're going to be killed by the sword, and no one's even going to care to bury them. Well, that's really pleasant. But God said, you have not protected the blood of the innocents, so now you yourself will be slaughtered. Ooh, make me sick in my stomach. I wonder if we're not beginning to experience some of that. We didn't have the Babylonians come in and decimate our city like the Babylonians did to Jerusalem in 605 and 597 and 586 B.C. But God he's a master at this poetic justice that he gives. I've talked about this before, that he tends to reciprocate or give back to mankind the way that they do wrong. And there seems to be some poetic justice here. You've slaughtered your kids. Now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to slaughter you and leave you on the refuse heap of life. I was pondering God's poetic justice a little bit. Do you ever do that? That's kind of scary. Since 1973, that's 45 years of government-protected abortions, we've terminated, estimates put it at 60 million. All right, if you come up with 58, not going to quibble, all right? That's a lot of innocent lives. Could it be that we're paying for that slaughter by a different kind of slaughter? I find it interesting the rise of childhood killers today. Columbine, Sandy Hook Elementary School. Is it just coincidence that our kids are now murdering us? Consider the irony. We have killed our babies, and now the babies we let live are killing us. Is there some justice and divine justice in that? I wonder. Perhaps God is tailoring his punishment so that we don't miss the message. This is a big deal to God. This isn't the only passage. God carted Manasseh away, 2 Kings 21, verse numbers 6 and 16. Manasseh was doing this, and God uprooted, took him off the throne, and took him all the way to Babylon. because he was involved in this. God thinks this is serious. All right, what else did God tell Judah here? Verse number 8, I'm going to make your city desolate and a hissing, and people are going to come along and go, whew. You know, the hissing is this idea like, whew, I cannot believe that happened to those people. Do you remember this great city? It had these big tall towers. The towers came down. The city's been leveled. It's decimated. So the second idea, not only are your corpses slaughtered, the city is made desolate. You know, and I got to thinking, what is God going to do if we just continue to do nothing about the fact that this is going on in our country? And if we're just going to, okay, well, you know, this isn't my problem. I didn't do it. Nothing I can do. Well, maybe there is more that I can do. Maybe there is something I can do to protect the life of the unborn. You know, I don't know all that happened with the Center for Medical Progress. It's CMP that did the five videos that were released in 2015 about Planned Parenthood. I don't know all the motives behind that. They did have two undercover people pose as workers for Biomax, a fictitious biomedical company that solicited from Planned Parenthood the opportunity to buy tissue for medical research. Okay, if you're really in the news, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're not, it doesn't really matter. But what impresses me is somebody said, you know, this bothers me that this is going on, and I'm going to do something about it. I'm not saying what they did was right. I don't even know. I read articles for what they did, articles against what they did. This sermon took too much time of researching all of this and that. And I don't know where you're coming down on it, but you know what impressed me? So somebody somewhere said, you know, the life of the unborn, I'm going to do something about it. I'm not going to sit on my hands. I'm not going to pretend like it didn't happen in my land, in my city. I'm going to do something. Lest the city be made desolate. You know, we kind of think ourselves pretty well protected in America, right? We are a superpower. All the nations of the earth have to salute us and bow the knee, right? You know, other nations have thought that too. Where are they today? You know, I wonder if God might make our city desolate, bring our nation to its knees. This isn't the only wickedness in our land, but it is a major one. And there are nations like North Korea. Oh, they can't hurt us. I mean, man, we just one bomb, take them all out. Really? Or Iran? Or Russia? Or maybe a nation that's not even on our radar yet? Could our city, our country be made desolate? If God wanted it to happen, I mean, really? We're not that big. We're not invincible. 9/11 showed us that we're not invincible. It doesn't even have to be a whole country. A handful of rogues hiding out in Pakistan and Afghanistan can do it. You see what I'm saying? I'm just saying, there's judgment. There is judgment for people who will not obey the sixth commandment. You shall do no murder. Finally, he says in verse number 9, I will cause them to eat the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters. Okay, there's no way getting around that. That's just, what do we call that? Cannibalism? Yuck. This happened in the days of Elisha. The king was Joram, northern Israel. Ben-Hadad, the Syrians, had surrounded the city, cut off water and food supplies, and after a while, you don't have anything to drink and you don't have anything to eat. Do you remember this? 2 Kings 6:26, if you want to read it later. Two women agree, okay, I have a son, you have a son. Well, let's make a pact. We'll eat your son today and my son tomorrow. Cannibalism. And so it happened. The one son met his demise on one day. The second day, the second lady, her son is gone. Hidden away somewhere. And she begs the king, you've got to do something. I gave up my son, now she needs to give up hers. What a mess. What a low state. I'm thankful we haven't got to that point in our country yet. But this sin is so serious that God will deal with it. He will not look away indefinitely. He decimated Jerusalem and Judah for it. And I have to think, though I'm not Israel, and the parallels are not always exact, that God couldn't have done this to his people and then ignored what's going on today. All right, so judgment is coming. But maybe there's something we can do to hold it back a little bit. There were reformations in the days of Josiah, and God said in the days of King Josiah, there's not going to be any harm to come to you in your day. And Josiah peacefully passed over the scene, and the judgment piled on the king after him, whose name I can't recall right now. So maybe we can hold it back a little bit. Maybe there's something we can do, something we should do. What can we do? All right. I have some suggestions. Maybe we need to covenant before God, I will not vote again for any candidate, regardless of their position, who is going to endorse this kind of thing and continue to legislate and implement laws protecting this crime. Not going to vote this way. You know what? It would have changed the election, I think, in 1992 when Bill Clinton ran. And it would have changed some other elections, too. I think we just, I'm not going to vote for the other guy. All right? Then maybe I shouldn't vote at all. Or maybe I need to find a third-party candidate. I've done this in the past. I don't like that one guy, and I don't like the other gal, and I'm just going to vote a different party, third party. You know, maybe there is something I can do. I'm giving you suggestions. Or are you just going to go back to sleep and forget that this is going on? What else can I do? I mentioned Kathy Herod, based out of Phoenix. It's called the Center for Arizona Policy. She's the second president. I forget the first president. It's been in existence now for about 17 or 18 years. They are a conservative lobbying group. You may not agree with everything they do, but they're on Capitol Hill in Phoenix, always championing family, the life of the unborn, and the reduction of substance trafficking and abuse in our state. And because of her efforts, just this week I got an email from her office. Did you know that you now live in the number one ranked state for pro-life measures? Arizona just moved in the Alliance United for Life. AUL is the organization that ranked Arizona as the most protective of the life of the unborn of any state. Praise the Lord. And you know why that's happening? Because you and I are voting for people who are protecting life. They're passing measures largely encouraged and supported by Kathy Herod and others in her organization. And we are getting measures passed that is getting very difficult to terminate. I think now, after week 21, no baby can be aborted in the state of Arizona, if I remember correctly. This is a great victory. And we need to pray for more of this and support organizations that are doing something. You can do something. You may not be able to do as much as you would like, but you can do something. So watch how you vote. Support organizations that are defending the rights of the unborn. Here's another idea. Support groups like New Life Pregnancy Center. In 2017, across the state of Arizona, they had 17 decisions for life. That is, 17 different women came into their clinic and were considering abortion, but because of the counsel and encouragement of Christian people, they decided to take the baby to term. 17 were saved last year in the state of Arizona. That's something. It's not enough, but it's better than nothing. Every year in our church, we do a baby bottle campaign. We'll have one later this spring. Get on board. Fill those baby bottles. Support the work of those who are trying to get in there and help. And they're already set up. They're already going. They're already better skilled and able to do it than you can personally. Maybe you could volunteer for that organization. Some of you come to me sometimes, what can I do? Well, I've got stuff for you to do, but some of you have more that you could do or more time you could give away. That's a good group. New Life Pregnancy Center, part of Arizona Baptist Children's Services, ABCS. Something you can do. Another idea, we could pray for those nameless people we don't even know that have made a decision against the life in their womb, and now they're suffering emotional trauma and setback. See, they went for counseling and they were told all about the procedure, but not anything about how to handle the emotions afterwards. New Life Pregnancy Center deals with some of these gals. We need to pray for them and these unnamed individuals that they will find the hope and forgiveness available in Christ. These are innocent babies, innocent lives. We can do something. We ought to do something. In fact, it may be more important than you think. I'm going to finish with a story. All right, so there is an Israeli soldier. This story takes place in Israel. His name is Gobi Ramon. I'm sorry, I just said his name wrong. Gadi, G-O-D-I, Gadi Ramon. He was shot outside the town of Ramalia, and the gunman assumed he was dead and moved on. Another Israeli came by, a young man, 27 years old, and stopped to help out this guy who was lying, this soldier lying on the road, got him into his car, drove him to an emergency room, turned him over to the medical personnel, and figured his job as a good Samaritan was done, and so he left. Moments later, Gadi's family arrived at the hospital. Did not meet the Good Samaritan, but waited on pins and needles most of the day to find out if their son, Gadi, would survive the gunshot wound. Thankfully, the surgery was successful, and hours later, they were told by the doctors that all is well and he would recover. 2 weeks later, Gadi went home. But it bothered, what's her name? Tarari, Gadi's mother, that she didn't know who the Good Samaritan was that rescued her son and got him to the hospital. So she started making phone calls, and she tried to contact, and she put up signs and posters asking if anybody knew what happened and who did this or saw the car, please let me know. Almost a year went by, nothing happened. And one day, the mother of the man, the Good Samaritan who made the rescue, his name was Shlomo, happened upon a grocery store. She was visiting someone else and was in a town, and in the grocery store she went, there was a sign. And it happened to catch her notice. She read it and realized, well, that's talking about my son. So she took the flyer off the wall, and she went over to a clerk and said, do you know who put this up? And so she was pointed to, it just so happened, Mrs. Tarari Ramon, who worked in that grocery store. The two of them met. And Mrs. Ramon said, when Gadi's mother, Mrs. Ramon, said that it was her, Shlomo's mother stared at her in disbelief. I can't believe you are the mother of the soldier my son saved. Look at me. You don't remember me? The two women had a previous acquaintance. Shlomo's mother continued, many years ago, my husband and I were living here in this city, and I came into your supermarket crying. I was pregnant at the time when I was about to arrange with my doctor to end my pregnancy. I was crying because I didn't want to, but I felt I had to because of financial pressures. You and your husband sat down and talked with me for hours. You didn't tell me what to do, but you were encouraging and supportive, so I decided to keep the baby. The baby's name is Shlomo. it's the very one that saved Gadi's life. Shlomo's mother said, "You saved my son, and in return, my son saved yours." Isn't that a neat story? We can make a difference. Mrs. Ramon made a difference in Shlomo's mother's life one day. Just a few hours of her time. But a life was saved. And as a result, led to the saving of her own son's life. Maybe there is more I can do. May God help us. Father in heaven,